Remind all participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's fake renewal notices drafting team call on Monday, the 12th of December, we have Mike O'Connor, James Bladel, Tatiana Kramsova. From staff, we have Perry Cobb and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies noted from Michaela Nalon, Paul Diaz, Ken Stubbs, and Marika Konings. And if I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Gisela, and welcome all. I think it's Katiana in. Oh, she's in the Adobe. Good deal. As you can see from our agenda, we've got the roll call done. Just a quick pause to check on statements of interest changes there. Anybody got a change that they want to tell us about? Okay. First up is a review of the summary of the background materials, which, if I'm reading the title right, is on your screen. I'm going to sync navigation because that way people who are watching the meeting recording will see what we're talking about. So I'm going to grab navigation away from you. Barry, did you do this one, or is this... Marika's work.
Marika put it together.
If you had drafted it, I would have thrown the ball to you. But this was an action item that came out of our first call last week, and I think that is this is a really good summary of the background materials and. I'm hoping that a lot of this will either just drop right into the report or drop into our questions. Did people have a chance to review it? Do we feel like we need to go through it in detail today, or shall we push on to some of the other stuff? I'm not feeling a tremendous need to review this, except to acknowledge a fabulous job by Mika.
Mikey, this is Barry. I'm almost certain that this will wind up as background material in the report, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's right. We may want to come back to this in a minute when we get to the questions, because there may be some questions that we want to steal from here. But I think for now, let's carry on. The next one is a status update on the request to INTA for information, and Marika sent me a note saying that she's reached out but hasn't heard back, so I think that one's an in-progress item. Anything to update on that, Barry? Did you talk to Marika about that?
Yeah, it's still open. And I'm not for sure, but I believe that really the INTA had mentioned that they had background material with respect to a different issue. I'm not sure if they actually have it for this one or not, but hopefully they will come back with something.
All right. Well, let's just park this one and see how it it unfolds over the next week or so. It is the holiday season, so things are starting to get a little choppy. Okay, on to the kind of main event, which is working on... our little list of questions. James, my goal here is to maybe get to a tentative first draft today. I was sort of looking at how the dates line up, and my thought is that if we could get these done fairly quickly, it would give us a little more flexibility on the back end. Because look at the way these dates are starting to show up, get pretty compressed at the back end. So, kind of small. How do people feel about that size? Can you read that, or shall I make it a little bigger? Read
Looks
it.
Good on my end.
What does that mean? Does it need to qualify or not for the home affordable mortgage?
An interesting sound. Is somebody speaking? Okay. James, are you okay? Can you see that?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. here's sort of what I want to focus in on. Preliminary list of questions to the registrars. As you can see, I added a few that I put in there in orange or brown or whatever that is. Just ideas that came to me. And I thought that what we could do is sort of work hard on this today and maybe publish a preliminary version of this to the list, and if we can, finalize this next week on our last call before the holidays. And then try and push it out fairly quickly to the registrars. We'll see if we can do this or not, but that's sort of the goal for today anyway. So some of these we came up with last week. The thing that I added is whether there's a trend. I think it'd be interesting to know if this scam is steady state, getting bigger, getting smaller. Let's focus on this one for just a minute. James, I think a lot of this is going to be a dialogue between you and me because, you know, I guess the question is, how do you think registrars would like to be able to answer this question? Do you think they'd be willing to simply tell us how many, or do you think that's too proprietary?
I'll just break.
Did I lose you just now?
No, I just raised my hand. I wanted to make sure I was...
Oh, I think on this call, you can just talk. You know,
okay, so this is James speaking. I don't know that that's... I don't know that, A, that registrars have 100% visibility into this, because they're receiving secondhand complaints from their customers. And if it's a complaint, reach the complaint stage, then some portion of them will be after the fact, after these names are transferred. The second would be that, you know, if I told you I had, I'm going to start picking numbers out of the air. If I told you I had 5,000 of those last year, or 20,000, does that, what does that change? You know, the magnitude difference. I think that the pivot piece of information that we're looking for with this question is in your orange there. Is this trending up? Is this trending down? And I think the other one would be what, you know, we have this this few notorious entities that are behind this. Are you seeing, is it still them? Are you seeing new ones? Are you seeing, is this proliferating, I guess, not just in volume, but in participants? I think that would be something to get a better understanding of. I see you typing furiously. I don't know if any of that was helpful.
That's very helpful.
So, you know, I think from a registrar perspective, the other bit of it would be, from our experiences, you know, what are you doing to stop these folks when they show up on your reseller networks? What are you doing to once they're detected? How do you kick them off, et cetera? You know, how are you policing your reseller systems if you have them? To keep these particular folks from engaging in this practice. And I think that I'm trying to couch my words here a little bit. I think there are two different ways to enforce control over resellers. One is through contracts, and another is by limiting their technical capabilities through the API. I think that, you know, one has
is more effective than the others. We can talk about that maybe some other time. I'll withhold my opinion on that one for right now.
But you know, it might be good to ask that and just get.
How do you govern? What is the mechanism that you use to govern your resellers, if you have resellers?
Wait a minute. Let's do that. What make it a multiple choice, or we could.
Yeah. Of course, both would be the preferred answer.
I think we have an open-ended question, other, and then. Good one.
I think that would be probably a good start, getting a registrar perspective of the existing landscape.
Let me pull this question up a little closer to this, kind of clump them together. Representative examples. Let's go back to this one and beat on this a little more. I like the way we've sharpened up this question. Let's try and sharpen the many are you getting question. Because I don't want us to get stuck on trying to ask for information that's not really terrible. You know, I think your point about 20,000, not 2,000. The actual number isn't really the issue. It's more of, do you view this as a significant number in your operation, or some sort of phrasing like that?
Well, you know, part of it could be, how are these usually brought to your attention? And I think the majority of them might be, you know, their customers. But another one could be other registrars or resellers of other registrars contacting you saying, hey, you know, customers are on the warpath because of something that's happening on your system. So I think, you know, what's the source of these complaints? And then you can get into, is it trending? But I think you're right. I think the actual raw number, you know, 200 or 2,000 or 20,000, I don't know that that's really what we're driving at. I don't know, Barry, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a quantitative problem, right? Right.
Qualitative.
More qualitative. If it happens to one person and it's one, you know, then that for that person it's devastating.
And not to mention that these are only the ones that you're, you know, that you have visibility to. It doesn't provide a quality or an overall quantity picture of what's really going on.
Right. You have to assume that what you're seeing is just the tip of the iceberg and that there's a lot more that isn't being reported to you, that somebody's just saying, well, I screwed that up. I'll just have to stay with my new registrar even though I felt like I was, you know, Mikey, you came from the telecom industry back in the day, if I correct, or you had some...
Yeah, this is slamming. I mean, you
it's
know,
slamming.
In the telecom
yeah.
industry, there's regulation about slamming.
So what can we learn from how the telecom dealt with slamming?
Well, in slamming, I mean, it's a regulated industry, first off. So the way that they handle it is there is a rule that when you're moving from one carrier to another, you talk to a third party that's contracted by, remember if it's the FCC that does this or the carriers. I think the FCC contracts with the third parties. And the gaining carrier says, okay, I've got you all signed up, but before I can proceed with this order, I have to transfer your call to someone else, and they will take your verification that you're really you and that you really want to make this transition. That's the step that's missing in the IRTP, is
yep.
the third party verification of the transfer between registrars.
The third party bit, yes. Now, we have in IRTPB created that form of FOA for the losing registrar. But
right.
I would hate to put more teeth in that because that will only be abused.
So. Yeah, I think that's right. And so this may get to this other question that I posed down here at the bottom, which is what are your thoughts on how to approach... Probably we've got two questions here. One is, what are your thoughts on how we do the work? I can. And then what are your thoughts as to the... Do you think the... should be in evolving. And then what we could do, well, ICANN or other third parties, I suppose, because, you know, there's governments, there's consumer regulatories. Because, you know, slamming protection is a pretty burdensome model. That
yep.
would mean basically that every single transfer between registrars would have to be run through this third-party verification thing. That would make our friends in the aftermarket quite crazy, I think.
Oh.
I mean, I suppose it could be automated, but again, that does get to the FOA kinds of stuff that's in the IRTP. So maybe what we do is, in this questionnaire, we just solicit some thoughts as to what registrars have been thinking about.
And maybe, you know, baby steps in different directions just to improve it, as opposed to, you know, solve it, would be disclosure, making sure that people are visible, you know, there's some visibility to what's happening. You use the word transfer. This is a change, you know, and that these things are not buried in fine print on a postcard. They're actually just as conspicuous as the price of the telephone number and the website. So.
Say that again. I was busy trying to type, and I had a little mental vacation.
I'm sorry, I was typing as well. So you know, maybe the first step towards addressing these, is if we're fishing for things to address, is how can we make sure that these notices, these fake renewal notices, you know, at their heart, they're deceptive.
Right.
They're marketing, but they're deceptive marketing. They pretend to be your existing registrar when they're not. So I think first and foremost, you know, we have to say that if marketing materials are designed to cause a registrant to transfer, then it should say the word transfer somewhere in the marketing. transfer your name to GoDaddy, transfer your name to Black Knight, whatever. You shouldn't say renew your names with GoDaddy by transferring them to Black Knight. That's deceptive and confusing. So I think using the word transfer and explaining that this is, you know, like with a sentence, and we can say that, you know, we can draft a sentence that says, you know, by accepting this offer, you agree to move the names from Registrar A to Registrar B, et cetera. The second thing is that that most of those, even when they do include some sort of honesty in these notices, they're being buried in tiny, tiny print on the back of a postcard, at least in a few, you know, instances I've seen. And I think that by requiring that sentence, by drafting a sentence and requiring that sentence to be at least as conspicuous as some of the other critical things, like price, contact information, website, you know, phone number, et cetera, that maybe that would be an improvement, at least by putting, by, you know, not allowing the this practice to hide in the fine print.
Yeah, okay. So, say that again. Terrible. Which teacher just turned over in her grave on that sentence? Let's talk about disclosure. This is disclosure within the notice or disclosure by registrars after the fact of the number and of these that these got?
I didn't gather that one.
When you were starting to talk about this, you started with the word disclosure. Did you mean it to mean the stuff that we've got then in those three down below, or did you mean disclosure, you know, sort of a wall of shame kind of thing by the registrar's thing?
No, I think those, it's those three things.
Yeah, okay, so I'll take that one out. Okay, so let's clump these together. Sort of truth. Is there anything else that we could throw out in terms of the things that people could do just to get them thinking? I mean, for example, one of the things that I brought into the scope, the next phase of the work thing, is basically a nod to Ken's point that there are consumer protection agencies out there and governments like Canada that deal with this kind of stuff, and should we limit the next phase of the work to just ICANN, or should we do some sort of cross either cross-constituency or even cross-entity working group to figure this out together, where we reached out to some of those governmental agencies. Any thoughts about that one, as long as I got us on it? Go ahead, Jim.
I'm not sure that there's... I would be very hesitant to go down that avenue. I think that those types of folks, that the types of government agencies that regulate advertising and marketing and business practices and consume and protect consumers, are they're good at what they do. They have their own procedures and they have their own jurisdictional limitations. I mean, if we want to shake the trees and get some ideas from them, that's one thing. But I think that we start to get into kind of a fractal disintegration of our topic if we start to go too far down that road. I don't know if that makes any sense. I'm afraid it will just go off in a million different directions.
Never used the word jurisdiction, so I don't know how to spell it.
And it's not just that they will take us in a million different directions. It's that very few of those directions will have immediate applicability to what we can do through ICANN.
No, I was thinking that maybe the solution to this lies outside of ICANN. And that's part of the reason for maybe drawing some of them in. I think that's part of where Ken was going, is that, you know, maybe one of the things that ICANN does is formulate some suggested best practices for consumer regulators, but acknowledges that ICANN, you know, this is the problem that the compliance folks ran into. They really don't have the tools to do the job. But, you know, this is not one that I feel terribly strongly about. I mean, you know, in terms of how ICANN does working groups, you know, even cross-constituency working groups are fairly hard for us to cope with, never mind cross-organizational ones. On the other hand, this does seem like one that might be a good test case for that. So I'm on the fence on that one. So either way. Let's replay the bidding. We're about half done with the call. Take a look at this list of questions. Okay, how many are you getting? Still haven't gotten this one done. So we've got, what's the source? To avoid the specific number one, what if we said, do you view this as a significant problem or a significant concern? So people could just say yes or no. Avoid quantitative responses. Is that a way around that? Is there a better way to phrase that? Put it in there as a straw man, anyway.
Mikey, this is Barry. I like what you're how you're phrasing this question, and kind of circling back to how many are you getting is, you know, instead of trying to look for that quantitative number, you know, is it? I almost want to say, you know, are you getting less than 1,000 complaints, or are you getting 1,000 to 5,000 complaints, or greater than 5,000 complaints. Instead, maybe we just say, you know, it really does tie back to, you know, how significant do you think this issue is? Not very significant, significant, or an extreme burden.
Something along those lines. Wait a minute.
Yep, that's exactly right, Mary. What is your burden? What is your response? What kind of resources do you have to dedicate to this problem? What's your opportunity cost or your resource, you know, your resource commitment to this? You have 3 full-time employees, or it's just something that keeps you, you know. Yeah, that's a good one.
We'll just put it in all 3.
What's your cost?
Rather than concern, like that. That certainly sidesteps, because the only way to get to any kind of quantitative number would have to be some sort of percentage thing, because otherwise, you know, GoDaddy with the large number of stuff that happens would, you know, in straight ordinal numbers doesn't work in this context. So maybe we strike this one altogether. If Mikey can figure out how to strike through text. No. I'll color it. I'll take it. Red. We've agreed that we like this one, right? Proliferation ones. Are they coming from? Well, this is misplaced. This is the one that kind of goes down here. I think this is going to be pretty open-ended stuff, you know, so that people can tell us things, you know, people, that, you know, James, this is sort of like you get to write your own questionnaire, because, you know, you and Michaela and a few others are probably going to be our only respondents, so.
Well, you know, I think we can take a different approach on this. Instead of throwing this out to, you know, the registrars and then hoping that we get more than 2 back.
Right.
One of the things we could do is ask Michaela and I to take it back to the stakeholder group.
Right.
You know, with some predefined questions, and that we can then go to, let's say, the XCOM of the stakeholder group, and, you know, kind of just take a more direct approach. Now, that the problem there is that the registrars that participate in ICANN, all, what, 100, couple
yeah.
hundred, whatever, is just a, you know, a slice of all the registrars that exist. And this practice, unfortunately, exists, like many of the bad practices, it exists in the boundary area between folks who are, you know, good enough folks that they abide by their RAA, but not so good that they actually pay some dues and show up at ICANN meetings and introduce themselves to people. So, you know, I mean, we're kind of in this boundary, well, we can take it back to the XCOM, but I don't think that's the crowd we're looking for. That's the crowd that is affected by this, but they're not, you know, I don't want to write it off as not, I think it can yield some valuable insights, especially if we target those who are mainly in the wholesale sector of the industry, like Wild West and Enom and Two Cows and those folks.
Okay, so if we were to take it to the XCOM, this would be in the form of taking it to them and saying, let's fill it out together, or taking it to them and saying, hey, you're the XCOM, go a little extra and fill this out for us. What was your thought there?
Oh, we would take it to them, and then we would post it to our internal lists and kind of shepherd the response and get some responses back to McKelly and I, and just kind of reach out to that group and give them some sort of a semi-confidential avenue that they can share that with us.
I don't use the word shepherd very much either. Do you want to sign up for aggregating the responses, too?
Well, yeah, we can do that with SAS.
I'm using a lot of words that I don't use very often. My spelling is pretty awful. I'm going to make this a little smaller. If your eyes get troubled, let me know. I'll just dig some of the bushiness out of this. That'll make it easier. But this one we're taking out. These are the reasons why. Let me just... start with source number burden stuff trend. Where are they coming from? Oh yeah, there we go. What is the mechanism to prevent these are notice examples, right? Then we get into the impact on your operation. Again, back to you, James. What kinds of things are you... I'm thinking that these are, again, broad general categories of harm, both to you as registrars and to the customers, the registrants, right? Shall we rattle off a little list of examples here to get people started?
I think let's keep it open-ended.
Okay.
Because I think what they're going to say is, yeah, we have this number of employees, or yeah, we spend this amount of money cleaning these up, or we lose a certain percentage of customers to this practice mistakenly believe we had something to do with it, or some, I say just leave this open-ended. Maybe we can throw out some, you know, we could say costs or lost customers or other, and then just leave it at that.
Oh, we could do that.
And because I'm really curious as to what we're going to get back there, and I don't want to lead the responses too much because I think that might be restrictive.
About impact on registrants, should we put that one in there too? Since you're talking to the registrants, or do you want to just leave it focused on registrar operations?
I think we'll hear that. I think, you know, if it's a registrar that's actually being negatively affected by that, we will hear that. Because, you know, a registrar that doesn't isn't responsive to the needs of their customers won't be a registrar for much longer. So.
Okay.
But, I mean, if we wanted to reach out separately, didn't we have someone who was going to shake the trees on ALAC on this one for us? Or?
Yeah, I think that was one of the Marika's actions. I think it was ALAC and IPC. I think IPC has got some stuff, too. So,
yeah,
I mean, this is the questions for registrars pile. You know, the impact on registrants stuff is also going to come in through a different branch of this thing, more in the form of background material. So this is really whether we want to ask registrars specifically anything about that. And if you think it'll flow through the impact. You know, what we could do is we could just change this on your operation or customers. How about that?
Yeah, sure.
That way, you kind of remind them of that. Okay. Now, this one is we've got this covered somewhere. Else. I think. Oh, no, this is the one we wrote. No, this is not the one we wrote today. Oh, here it is, right here. It seems like these two are the same. Let's see if I can highlight them both. There we go. So I think, barring howls of protest from James, my immediate reaction is to delete this one because it's really handled better by this new one that we wrote today. Anybody violently opposed to that idea?
Well, I'm not opposed to it, Mikey. Sorry, this is James speaking. I'm not opposed to it, but I think we need to make sure, built into both of these, or, you know, baked into these questions is an assumption that this is a reseller issue. And I think that's correct. But I don't want to assume that is universally true. I think that we understand that if it were an accredited registrar, that compliance might have something that they could do.
Right.
Perhaps, if we could, I agree with you, delete that second part, the one that's currently in blue.
Okay.
And keep the one that's in gray. But maybe one other issue that we could ask of staff, and that would be Marika. And maybe she would chat with compliance and ICANN legal, is suppose that it were found. Okay, so it's two questions. Suppose that we found that, A, this practice were being done by an accredited registrar, or B, one of the folks who's notoriously known for this practice in the past, this Brandon Gray companies, were to apply for accreditation. What would be the likely outcome of those? Is there something in the registrar accreditation process that would catch this? Is there something that says you can't be a registrar if you've done this? Is there something that a compliance could do if it were a registrar doing this that they can't do if it's a reseller? I think some of those questions, I think, would be really interesting to hear an opinion from ICANN Legal on. Did any of that make sense, Mikey?
Yeah, it did. It went by too fast for me to type it. I got the first
one. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So what I've got so far is, in addition to framing a request for the registrars, which is what we've been working, and I just disappeared. There it is, but let me shrink it for a minute. I stuck another chunk of work in here for us to do, which is a series of questions for the staff. And I got the one about, is there anything in the accreditation agreement? Ugh, which I can't spell. Come on.
Not the accreditation. Well, yeah, I guess. The
process, not agreement.
Yeah.
Process.
The application for accreditation. So I have an LLC that I just set up, and I want to be a registrar.
Right.
You know, there's a number of checks and hoops and things I have to jump through to do that. I don't just get a copy of the RAA and sign it and pay my check, although I'm sure that's what some people feel like that's what happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, suppose, is that process geared to catch folks that may have been flagged as bad actors in other areas of the industry? I guess what I'm getting at, Mikey, is that in this question and also in RAP, I think we came to the conclusion fairly quickly that this was a reseller issue, and I believe that is correct. But want to be sure that if that is not just a coincidence, that there is a reason that's a reseller issue, that there are too many protections in the official channels that, you know, that drive this into the reseller, and not just any reseller, but, you know, even outside of the, I want to say, the white hat reseller networks and into the gray hat reseller networks. So,
you know, this is my dumb question of the day, but even a bad reseller rolls up to an accredited registrar.
Yes, they do.
And so why can't we just nuke the accredited registrar?
Oh, according to the new version of the RAA, you can't.
Aha. Uh-huh. So as soon as the bad act... So maybe this is another question for the staff. And Barry, Barry, the brain surgeon, feel free to dive in here. James, I'll have to explain to you why Barry is now Barry the brain surgeon, but we'll do that when we're not recording the call. That's his new name.
Is it a name you gave him, or is it a name he gave himself?
Yeah.
It sounds like...
Barry would never name himself Barry the brain surgeon.
I do have a tattoo of it, though. No. Yeah, I agree with these questions. I'd love to be in a position to answer them, but certainly I think this will be, you know, more a focus for the legal department to provide a statement on.
So there's my second question. Does the new version of the RAA provide more or better mechanisms to address the FRN issue? And I think
the answer is yes.
Yeah, and you know, maybe they can elicit, you know, they can sort of expand why and stuff like that. In which case, maybe we're solving a problem that's soon going to be stopped another way, which would be nice to know.
Mm.
Or is that a question that we need to frame for the registrars that says, given the new...
I mean, what is it that you feel like is going to, you know...
Well, so...
what's going to come save us here?
Domain, what's their names of North America or whatever they're called, I can't remember, if they roll up into an accredited registrar,
uh-huh,
and the new RAA lets compliance nuke the accredited registrar, then Domain Kids of America no longer have a mechanism to transfer names, right?
Well, I would say yes, but in the new version of the RAA is probably already in effect. In fact, I think it's 90 plus, 95 plus percent of registered domain names are covered by that in almost all of your large registrars. Yeah, it's a question for compliance.
I guess the question that's coming to mind for the registrars is what...
I don't know that this is a compliance issue.
Right. But I guess, what's... when we get to the role of ICANN question, got about 7 minutes to go.
This is Barry. I would say that, it really only becomes an issue for ICANN to address as if these issues start rolling up, just like transfers do. We receive the request through the through the ticketing system, and we have visibility into it. But, with respect to this issue, I'm not sure that ICANN has the visibility to it, and therefore I'm not sure that we can necessarily act on it per se, although, it is something that is enforceable within the RAA, so we'll have to noodle on that.
This is a rough cut. I'm thinking about asking the registrars that question since they're the ones who live in that environment. Is that a stupid question? What holes do you see in the new RAA, and do you think it provides enough tools for clients and ICANN to handle this? James, you sounded pretty skeptical.
I think it would be fair to ask that question. I know how I would answer it.
So if the answer is no, there aren't enough, that's not enough of a leg to stand on, the next question is, what do you think needs to be added? Can I ask that too? RAA per se, but,
I think if we take a step back, the question is, what do you feel for registrars? What do you feel ICANN can be doing in this, within their role? Because when you say things like added, then immediately registrars see expanded ICANN role, right?
Right.
And then they immediately and reflexively say, no. We'll fix this ourselves, but we can't.
Right.
So I think instead it would be like, what do you feel is an appropriate role for ICANN in addressing this issue?
It's 4 minutes to the hour. I think that's a darn fine piece of work, but I think that's about all we're going to get done today. I think the goal of getting something approved on next week's call just vanished, so that's fine. Rather than push this out to the list, I think what we'll do is do one more call like today. I feel like we're pretty close, but this whole approach, this stuff here, I think needs a fair amount of work, and rather than try and beat through it really quick, why don't we just wait and polish it off and bring McKaylee and Paul and Ken up to speed next week? How's that suit? okay with you, James?
Yes.
All right, then. Let's see. Confirm next meeting, Thursday, 22 December. Ah, that's interesting. So this is a small – in the DSSA, I think we're going to ask the DSSA next Thursday, this Thursday, whether they want to meet a week from Thursday. What's happening is we're switching from the Monday time to the Thursday time that popped out of the doodle poll. And the problem is that that's 3 days before the – or 2 days before the holiday weekend starts. James, are you still working that day, or are you wrapping up?
Which day is it, the 22nd?
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh, I'm always working.
So
you know, I will say, for the record, since we're being transparent, my company has one of the most generous holiday vacation policies I've ever encountered, with just loading on vacation days and holidays and personal time. And then I will also say that I take none of it.
All right.
That's completely my fault. It's not because I work for a piece of the
MP3 and send it to Tim.
Yeah. It's not because I work for a draconian organization. It's because poor work-life balance on my part. Completely my fault.
Okay.
But yes, I will be available on the 22nd.
All right. So we'll Barry, the brain surgeon, are you on deck on the 22nd as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Why don't we just go ahead and meet then? Because even if we have a small group like this, we still make a fair amount of progress. And I worry that if we slide all the way now out into January, we really compress the schedule at the back end. So we'll go ahead and meet on Thursday the 22nd.
Noted. Thank you, Mikey.
Okay, I think that's it. It's 59 minutes into the hour. I think we'll call this quits. Gisela, you can shut down the recording.
Fab, thank you.
See you all in a week or so.
Great. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.